was declaring that all the civil courts of Israel were equivalent to Yarchaov. וכתב בין השאר שכשאשר נתבונן בפעם האיסור לדון בהופעות של גויים שהוא מפני שאדון מפניהם הוא מייקר שם אליהם להחשיבם שנאמר ואויבינו כלילים שכשאויבינו כלילים זהו עדות לעילוי יראתם כמו שפירוש רש"י בפרשת משפטים לפיכך אדון בפניהם הרי זה רשע הוא כאילו חירף וגידף והרים יד בתורת משה כדברי הרמב״ם על שולחן ערוך אם כן, מטעם זה עצמו גם יהודי ששופט על פי חוקותיהם, a Jew who is actually a judge in such courts, בוודאי שהוא גורר יותר מגוי, שהגוי לא נצטווה לשפוט דווקא על פי דת ישראל, אבל יהודי זה שמצווה לדון על פי התורה, הוא מתנכר אליה ודן על פי המג'לה שהאוטומונים ושאר חוקי אומות העולם שעליהם נאמר, etc., etc. So according to, let's understand the law according to Rabbi Vadsha Yosef.
When did you write?
About 20 years ago also. But he hasn't changed his opinion on this. So here you have the spiritual leader of the third largest party in the state of Israel declaring that appearing before the Jewish but non-religious courts, the civil courts of the state of Israel, is akin to idolatry. That a lawyer who represents a Jewish client against the Jewish plaintiff in any court, anywhere in the world, is aiding and abetting in the sin, and therefore violates Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechol, and that a Jewish judge in any court system, even if they're non-Jewish litigants, but is applying laws other than Torah is equally well guilty of this crime. So therefore, Judge Ginsburg, for example, is considered Rasha, and doesn't matter, makes it even worse. And Judge Brandeis, etc., would all be considered violators of this law.
What is the advice to worry if someone is in trouble?
Well, this is part and parcel of the problem. Let's not kid ourselves. From the point of view of Avadia Yosef, the trial of Derry was illegitimate. And this is nothing other than sheer persecution of members of the Jewish religion on the part of an anti-Semitic, anti-religious government. He does not recognize the authority of the judicial system of the state of Israel. But this is not something that's peculiar to the Derry case. This is part of the stated rabbinical position of all of the rabbinical authorities in the Israeli rabbinical court system and most of the writers outside of the rabbinical court system. And we'll now take a look as to see what the various authorities say outside of Israel have to say on a similar question.
Barak is a son of a Russian. He's always ruled on every religious issue. Barak. Not only civil, but even religious.
That's a very good point. I'm not saying that there's all of the negatives here reside with the Israeli rabbinical court. To the contrary, let's take a look at some of the decisions of the Israeli Supreme Court, which are equally outrageous. For example, there's such a thing as marriage in the state of Israel. Marriage, according to the laws of the state of Israel, are controlled by the rabbinical court, which decides issues of marriage and divorce according to the halacha. Now, of course, on the one hand, the only people that really suffer from this are the religious Jews themselves. In other words, if a couple wanted to get married in the state of Israel, it would, and doesn't want to get married in the rabbinical court system, they take a short boat trip to Cyprus, or maybe take a bus trip down to Egypt, or maybe now even to Amman, and get married in some other court system. And therefore, all of the difficulties having to do with marriage and divorce, all of the problem of so-called problems of gunot, which are getting more and more press, apply in the main only, or perhaps almost 100%, only to the religious women. The non-religious women and the non-religious couples who've never accepted the authority of the rabbinical court in the first place don't suffer from the various abuses which the Israeli rabbinical courts actually do. But on the other hand, there are decisions of the Israeli Supreme Court which take this to outrageous limits. For instance, because of the fact that only religiously authorized marriages are official marriages enacted by the State of Israel, the state has to, the government has to recognize common law marriages. A man and a woman live together for many years and then they break up. Is the woman supposed to be thrown out without any kind of compensation, support, rights, and so on? So therefore, common law marriages are recognized by the State of Israel and by the Israeli courts. That is, the by court decision, the spouse, the courts have been giving more and more recognition to spousal rights in common law marriages. But of course, these common law marriages are done completely within the control of the court, and therefore the Israeli Supreme Court, in some recent decision of a few years ago, gave spousal rights to a steward who was living with another steward on an airline. In other words, Israel is probably the only state in the world in which homosexual rights of spouses to homosexual in homosexual relationship is recognized as binding by the High Court of the land. So I agree with Mr. Weinstein. This is a completely outrageous decision. What one is dealing with here is problems of trying to understand if there's any possibility whatsoever of coming to some kind of a modus vivendi between a religiously observant minority, a traditional majority, and an even smaller, tiny, anti-religious population, which is overrepresented, perhaps, on the in the court system. Okay, so I'm not trying to paint the picture that that this is a one-sided problem. I'm just trying to point out that on our side of the picture, that is, on the religious side of the picture, the situation has become, if I can use the word, grotesque. For instance, take this decision of Ovadia Yosef. If we take this decision literally, it would mean that Yeshiva University should shut down its law school.
They just had a big defenders. They can be defenders.
They represent. Go ahead.
They can represent.
Corporations.
The halacha doesn't recognize the existence of corporations. Jewish law, as it currently exists, that's one of the problems we're going to have to come to grips with, doesn't recognize, precisely because Jewish civil law has in effect not been active for the last 200 years. Since the time of the loss of Jewish autonomy at the end of the 18th century, in fact, Jewish courts have not been functioning. So all of this claim of applying the authority of the Shulchan Aruch and the Choshen Mishpat and so on is to some extent a fiction. That is, it doesn't represent what actually was happening not only within the last 200 years when officially Jewish autonomy disappeared everywhere in Europe and in many places elsewhere in the world, and never existed in the United States, for example. And therefore, many of the developments in ordinary commercial transactions, such as, for example, corporations, which were things that may have had an earlier history but really came to the fore only in the last 100 or 150 years, don't have any existence in Jewish civil law in the way it is written in the Choshen Mishnah. So this is part of the problem. But also part of the problem is that, the story as it's told is not particularly accurate. Let me go on. For instance, the next article that I have is a long discussion as to whether a chartered accountant in America would be something like a CPA. Can a CPA appear before a court to testify in a case between two Jews? Here's a decision from Rabbi Weiss, then of Manchester and then later in Israel, deciding that in fact Jewish chartered accountant would not be allowed to appear before a court in a situation where there's a case between two Jews. All right? That's all of this from 13 to 18. Okay?
What year was this?
That was about 15 years ago. So let's get to something that's more recent. Here, to my page 19. This is now 1995.
The rabbinic court always had their active throughout the 2nd century.
What?
The Beis Din was always active, you know?
In what?
In any, for example, the Shasta Jewish that we had their professional court.
I'm going to examine that in a minute. Here's a long article by Rabbi Blythe in something published in 1995 by Yeshiva University Press. Okay? Okay. On his page 5, he writes, European communities were organized on the basis of a kahila system, on my page 21. In every town, village, and hamlet, the Jewish community designated individuals to administer communal institutions and to provide for spiritual as well as the temporal needs of its inhabitants. A rabbinical scholar was designated to serve as chief rabbi of the city and was usually assisted by dayanim, who served as associate judges. Their primary matter was to rule on matters of religious law relating to both individual observance and the community as a whole, and to sit as a court to adjudicate any financial or interpersonal disputes that may arise. Okay? And we'll check in a minute whether that's true or not true. But he then goes on to say that, and you can read this all for yourself, this is in English, which he goes on to say that in fact there's a serious prohibition today to appear before the secular courts, or for a Jewish lawyer for that matter to represent a plaintiff before the secular courts. And in response to Chaim Palagi's question as to why this was not listed amongst the 613 mitzvot, his answer is very simple. This is part of Avodah Zarah. So therefore, it's part of the prohibition against idolatry. So here you have one of the leading Rosh Yeshivot in Yeshiva University, presumably a left-wing Orthodox institution on the scale of what constitutes Orthodox institutions today, saying that it indeed is prohibited to appear before the Supreme Court, and therefore demands the establishment of re-establishment of the Beit Din to adjudicate things between Jews. So therefore,
In every kahila.
What?
It's
they're actively trying to do.
Which they're actively trying to do.
Since he is a lawyer, presumably he has a theory for it.
We're speaking of Israel or the whole
world? No, he's now talking about, not talking about the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a slightly more moderate position is taken by Rabbi Broyd, and I cite various chapters from his book on page 29 to 33. He discusses, he also agrees that there's a serious prohibition here against appearing before secular courts, but denies that it applies, that the prohibition extends to lawyers. He says that since the plaintiff could have gotten another lawyer, a non-Jewish lawyer, to represent him, therefore the fact that you, the Jewish lawyer representing him, doesn't make you completely liable for aiding and abetting in the commission of a sin. So we're again, there's no question in my mind that this latest development in the United States is a reflection of what was happening in Israel. That is, the violent attack against the secular court system in Israel has led to a turnabout in the ideology of the so-called modern Orthodox movement in the United States, where up until 15 or 20 years ago, I don't think the general ideology here is that we're supposed to be citizens of the United States and participate in the economy and vote in the elections and be judges and engage in all sorts of professions. The attack against the use of the court system and the appearance before the court system as a functioning, and regarding that as a sin, is sort of a novel turn, another part of the turn that we're seeing in the current ideology, which is leaning more and more towards creating a isolated community within the United States, cut off from the general society. So that therefore, all of those ideals as proposed by Revel and Belkin and the heads of Yeshiva University in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, in the sense in which one could be a good Jew and be also a citizen of the United States, abide by its laws, and so on, are now being turned in another direction, perhaps in the direction of something like the Amish community, which also doesn't recognize the legitimacy of the laws of the United States and manages somehow to function within a very prescribed, narrow economy and stay away from the general culture completely.
How does this apply to something like the diamond?
That's a very good question, but I'm going to try to deal with this. I want to deal with a slightly broader question, which is, first of all, is it true, this description that Rabbi Reif gave of the typical Eastern European Jewish community, where the rabbi was appointed the Abbezdin, and he, with some other Talmidei Chachamim, sat as the judges in not only decided questions in halacha, as far as ritual law is concerned, as far as Dinei Shabbos or Dinei Kashrus and so on, but actually were judges in civil courts. So I'm going to take a, look at
in civil court, or did they themselves sit in judgment?
He's saying that the judges in the Jewish communities, the courts were always headed by rabbis.
And we're autonomous.
Cass's book from last year, he said no.
Okay, so who's right? Let's actually see. So there are two parts to this question. One part is obvious, that after the elimination of Jewish autonomy at the end of the 18th century, when the governments simply withdrew from Jews the right to adjudicate civil cases, then certainly the rabbis did not sit in the main in civil courts. So the first thing we should look at is who was manning the court system before the loss of Jewish autonomy.
Civil courts.
Let's agree, and this is a very important point, that for thousands of years, Jewish autonomy existed, including judicial autonomy, in many parts of the world. In other words, this was not only Jewish. As we will see, the nature of the way in which cases were judged between members of different communities was, in many, many, many places, based not on something which didn't yet exist, namely a national state, but was based on the ethnic component of the community. So therefore, within the Persian government of 2,400 years ago, the Zoroastrians had their court system, the Jews had their court system, and so on.
But even in Rome, when the Jews had their own, or were allowed to have their own court system, the Roman law still superseded any of the Jewish law if it came into conflict with it, did it not?
I'm going to spend a lot of time discussing exactly what happened in Rome, in Persia, in Babylon. The history is far more complicated than one would guess at first glance. But let me first deal just simply with this even more elementary issue of fact. Assuming that there was Jewish autonomy and that the Jews were adjudicating their own cases, who in fact were the judges? In other words, unless we have very clear evidence in the largest Jewish community in Europe, the city of Prague. I didn't hand this out because this. So here I'm going to read. I haven't passed this out because it's much later. It will take us 6 or 7 weeks to get all the way up to the 18th century, since I'm going to be starting in about back in Persian times. But I'm going to read two different selections from the Drushei Hatzlach. This is the sermons, the drashot of the Noda Yehuda, Rabbi Yecheskel Landau. Okay, so here is one sermon before the loss of Jewish autonomy. Hitmotutut Amud Hadin. On the undermining of the pillar of judgment. Manomar umana daber. What can we say? Pirku ol haTorah me'al tzavaram. They have removed the yoke of the Torah from their necks. Umar daber mehamon am v'yad haSarim v'hasganim b'mal hazeh. Ba'nivi tzarach shemuna zot v'shei Beit Yaakov u'ktzinei Yisrael ha'metaavim mishpat v'et kol ha'yisharo yirakeshu. Bune Tzion b'damim v'Yerushalayim v'yavla. Hinei Tzion b'mishpat yipadeh v'shaveh v'tzvaka. V'ze zman rav. This is a length of time. Sha'ol ha'galut mitarech v'akadosh baruch hu mitzapeh l'gulatam. And God is looking for the redemption. V'anu ma'chikim ha'gu'ula v'ma'asenu ha'ra'im v'ma'aleinu asher lo tovim. Ki ein din v'ein mishpat. For there is no judgment and no justice. וזה שהכתוב מתמה מתאבים משפט ודומה בנות ציון בדמים בירושלים אלא הכי אתם סוברים שמה שנאמר ציון במשפט תיבדה היינו פסקי בעל הבתים. Do you really think that the Zion, that Zion will be redeemed by justice refers to the judgments of householders אשר רוב פסקיהם בשביל איזו פנייה, because most of their judgment is because of some corruption, or b'shvil shochad damim, or because of bribery, or l'chavana acheret, v'amar meta'avim mishpat, haynu din Torah meta'avim lagamri, they hate the Torah altogether, v'omrim batel chashiviteo, shehem ayu kufim l'mishpatei ha-Torah, that they should be subordinate to the laws of the Torah, ach lefamim gam b'mishpatei ha-cha'ot, ha-benuyim al pisechel ha-anoshi, the laws of the Austrian government, which is based on a human intellect, al kol parim yesh bo tzad hayosha. On the other, at least it has some sense of justice. Va'amar katuv lo chein hu elav et kol ha'yishara yivakeshu. This has led to this terrible burden of taxation. Ki aporek mimenu ol Torah, he who removes the yoke of the Torah, not nimalav ol malchut. Hine ein akavana ol Torah hu alimut, the yoke of Torah doesn't refer to study. Ki adarabah yoshev elomeid ein ha-Torah alav ol, someone who studies doesn't regard the Torah as a yoke, ela ve'en l'chanachat kadol mizeh, there's no greater pleasure than sitting and studying Torah. V'devrei v'dadeh etc. It refers to someone who has a court case. Shebedin Torah yetzei chayav, that according to Jewish law he would be guilty. Like the taxation in Bohemia is greater than I've ever heard anywhere in the world. אבל גם זה לא נשמע בכל גלות ישראל שיהיה משפטי התורה נבזים ופורקים בדין כמו כאן. That the laws of the Torah should be so insulted as here. ואם יאמרו, הלא גם במושב הקהל יש לנו קצת איזה אינם לומדים ויכולים לדון דיני תורה. That even in the group of people who are appointed by the Kahal to adjudicate cases, they could judge according to the laws of the Torah, Shinitein Lahem Commission, when they're assigned a particular case. Omer ani lo chen hadavar. Im kvar hadavar masur biyad haroshim, liten commission b'mad misha yirtzu, if the heads of the community can assign cases to those on the judicial panel who they choose, shuv afim if nuka mision biyad halomdim, even if they assign the case to people who know how to learn, lo yetzei la'o mishpat, the case will not come out correctly. Yeshli mukva mufurash al zeh ach mityarei ani la'omro, I have a pasuk which would apply to this, but I'm afraid to say, v'yim chas v'shalom adayin yitnu katev sareret yavu alai, it's better for me to keep quiet on this issue. The old tsu'uru, kama mehem yesh bakahav. How many people are on this judicial panel here in Prague? That is the judicial panel appointed by the kahal to judge cases. V'yesh b'nehem shnei lomdim shiyesh lahem shem oreinu. There is perhaps two of this large number of judges who actually have gotten the equivalent to what we would call smicha today. Haven't come a man. Look at how many cases are given to them in the course of a year. If there's some tiny small cases where there are no large sums involved, this they give to the rabbis. When there are large cases in which there are substantial judicial fees attached, those they give to the non-learned judges.
There's the bottom line.
etc. So therefore it's clear, in contrast to the story painted by Rabbi Bly, that in the city of Prague, where there was judicial autonomy prior to the removal of judicial autonomy on the part of the Emperor Joseph, the court system in Prague was not manned by rabbis. It was manned by officials appointed by the community. If you look 100 or 200 years earlier, in the time of the Marshal, he also writes that the courts are not manned by the Dayanim, that is by the rabbis. So A, this picture, as if at all times in the idyllic past, the Batei Din were in fact manned by rabbinical authorities, is just simply not true. Now, I don't mean to say the opposite. There were many places in which there was a well-organized court system in which the courts were manned by Talmidei Chachamim, and the basis was one of halach, but this was not true in all cases and at all times. On the issue of conflict between religious law and Roman law, between halacha and foreign law, we will really never go into that in detail next time, because we now have an excellent collection of all of the Roman documents dealing with the Jews published by Professor Linder, and we'll be able to cite from that in detail to see exactly what the situation was.
But is there a difference between the court system and the Bezdin dysfunction?
No, I'm saying that in a city, we know clearly from this picture painted by the Notable Yehuda, that in Prague, in the 1770s or 1780s, prior to Joseph's edict eliminating internal Jewish autonomy from the Jewish community, there was internal Jewish autonomy, but the judicial courts, the civil courts within the community, were not manned by rabbinical scholars.
They still had that Bezdin. There was Bezdin and Dayanim.
In other words, it was called Bezdin.
Those courts were called the Bezdin.
Yeah.
But the Bezdin consisted of Balabatim, not of Rabbanim.
So we always had Hedyo.
We have to see that. We have to see what always means. For example, we will find that there was a great difference between what was taking place in Babel, on the one hand, where consistently over a period of maybe close to 1,000 years, the Batei Din were manned by rabbinical scholars, and what was happening in Eretz Israel, where the situation was far more varying and fluctuating. But I now want to turn again to another brief quote from the Notable Yehuda, written after the loss of autonomy. Okay, and now he's complaining about the behavior of the rich versus the poor. He says, he quotes the Rambam, the Katava Raiva Zalva Ochel, Shor, and the Yim, Yash, Roma, Avram, the Meshu, Shonesh, Shor, Boresh, Enel, Shor, the Dalit, Klomar, Shul, Bokek, Oto, Bokhol, Achimachlitin, Lo, Kaka, Oto, Bokhol, Omotilim, Omotalim, Shulahim, the Omer Shali, and he takes. That the Raiva interprets the robbery of the poor to mean a creditor who collects a debt from a poor person by taking a pledge at less than its actual value. This practice, which the Raiva decries, is popular in Bohemia. Shemalvela ani al habayit. He takes a mortgage against the poor person, against the poor person's house. Oholech bepin kasaot, and he gets all of the receipts. Ve'achakach marbeh tzaot, and therefore increases the expenses of collection and so on. Ad she ein yad ha'ani maseget lefdot. That the poor person can't make his payments. V'shuv mevi habayit lidei substatia. Then he brings the case before the civil court. V'nechlat lo b'pachot mechatzi shavya. And then he acquires the property at less than half the value of the house. V'lo mibay im mitchila ba be'arama. It doesn't matter to me whether this was initially he intended to get the poor man's house by this procedure. An evildoer is someone who offers money to a poor person when he's in bad straits in order to be able to take advantage of it. וגם עובר לא תחמוד נשאר שנתן אינו באחוזתו ולרשע כזה אין אנו צריכים לדברי הרייבה. For this type of evildoer, we don't need the complaints of the Raiva. אלא אפילו מתחילה הלביאו לפי תומו. Even if the original loan was innocent. V'achakach im dochek alavo lokeach beito al yudei substatia kanal. But if afterwards, when the collection time comes, he forecloses on the property by the use of the courts like that, who yodea ba'atzmo shabayit shave yoter, and he knows in his own mind that the house is worth more than what he is collecting it for, harei hu mu'ukav tshuva. This person cannot do tshuva. V'chein matzui gam b'metalpulim. Okay, and this is also when they try to collect on movable property. Where the lien is on furniture or movable property, not necessarily real estate. Now he adds, "V'hi ne ma shaholchin la'al ki mitchila." The fact that they go to the civil courts, ab initio, instead of going to the batei din, the hazariz mishubach, and whoever gets their first benefits, the ein ani moched avaseh, I don't protest the fact that the Jews are going to the civil courts to collect their liens against other Jews. Sharei zocheh mitzad dina d'malchuta, because there's a benefit to him from the point of view of the method of collection in bankruptcy cases according to the laws of Austria. Rishon rishon kodeh. Aval ma she'achar kach mevi'in hamitalteilin lidei litzpirum, when they bring the property before a listing, v'hotzaot mitrabim, v'kol nechzei haloveh holchim l'timaon, and all of the property of the poor debtor goes into the pit. Basharanim keret v'chatzi shaviha, and the goods are sold at half their value. V'kol ze al habal chov ha'acharon sheyotzein daki, v'hu gorem l'harbo ha'tzaot l'hapsid gam etzeh shelefanav, davar ze ra. This is bad. Aval haderach hayashar, the best means is she'achar shekvar nirshemu etzel haraki al sidran, once the civil court has given the order of collection of the creditors, yodin mi rishon umi achron al haseder, and they have all, the civil courts has already decided who should come first and which creditor comes first and which creditor comes second as far as collection is concerned. Shum ra'uy she'yitafsu kulam ledayanim. Then all of the creditors should come to the Jewish courts. V'heima yasu ha'chalukah hal seder dina demalkuta. They should enforce the judgment of the none of the Austrian bankruptcy court according to whatever they decided. Rishon rishon kila. V'az lo yiru otzaot chinam. V'asferanim keret l'fi shavya. V'gezel zeh shchiyach b'cholet v'cholona. So it's very interesting.
What's the acknowledgement?
He's saying that I don't object to the fact that they're using the Austrian courts, and in fact will cooperate to them to this extent that the Austrian bankruptcy court will decide in which order to the creditors collect. But it's a pity that all of these lawyer expenses which accumulate when execution time comes before the Austrian court, in which a huge amount of money is lost by the poor debtor because the execution courts are enormous, at least let the Jewish community, after receiving from the Austrian courts the order of collection of the creditors, do the enforcement without collecting an unreasonable fee, and therefore not grinding the poor debtor into the ground. So again, after the loss of Jewish autonomy, we see that the note of Yehuda is not screaming out loud like Rabbi Avadia Yosef or like Rabbi Bleich saying that we're not to have anything to do with the secular courts if anyone appears there, but let's try to come to some kind of a reasonable compromise where on the one hand we will abide by the decision of the Austrian courts, but on the other hand we will try to minimize the court expenses in the collection.
Did anybody look at this question from another standpoint? Like, if the Jewish court, even in Israel, is not as developed as to handle all these issues, you can't just let them slide because you're supposed to have judgment, right? Like, that's one of the Jewish laws. You're supposed to judge and to have proper judgment in the society. So if you can't, it's better to have somebody do that.
No, that's a very important point, and we will see how that point was expressed by rabbis in the middle of the 19th century. Before we get to that, I want to go back now and do a very difficult job, which is discuss how the Jewish court systems functioned in various eras. And this is an enormous amount of work, mainly because this is such a contentious issue that practically every historian who's written on this issue is written on it from trying to express a point of view dealing precisely with the modern questions of today. So therefore, I'm going to have to weave my way through the different scholarly writings in order to be able to extract some semblance, or at least my take on it, rather than with my own prejudices, rather than the accumulated prejudices of various people. So the topic for the next week, I will try to discuss the court system in Israel during Talmudic times. And on that, we have the marvelous work of Gedalia Alon, which is completely negated by a lot of other people, but we will stick with Alon's point of view. Then the shiur after that, I would like to discuss the court system as it functioned in Babel during the time of the Amoraim, up until the Gaonic period. Then I would like to discuss the court system within the Gaonic period after the advent of Islam and the really truly great achievements of the High Gaon, who centralized all of the court system. Then we will discuss the Rambam, and then we will discuss what was happening in medieval Europe, and then we'll come up into the 15th century in modern times. So I'm trying to broad picture so that at least we should have some historical perspective before we then come to the really hard problems, which is how to deal with the situation in something like Israel, where on the one hand, as you say, we have to live in a functioning court system, and on the other hand, we don't want to be completely overturned to Rav Moshe and so on. So that's the task.
Do you have any books that you recommend?